everyone, and welcome to Minute 122 of Season 3 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Jeanette Ward of the Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl. Welcome back to the show, Jeanette.
Hi! I'm so happy to be here. This is so much fun. I love talking about this movie.
Well, what can you do? Americans are all alike.
Absolutely.
All right, well, Minute 122 begins with John giving up and ends with Eddie becoming a triclops. All right, so yesterday we ended things.
Triclops. I was like, wait, yes, no, that's accurate.
It is. I was going to call him a cyclops. I was going to say Cyclops, but then I said, wait a second, he's not a Cyclops.
It's more accurate. He takes one of those Krychek shots to the center of the forehead.
That's right. Isn't Triclops like one of the He-Man adversaries or friends or something like that?
I believe so, but you know I don't know for sure.
I haven't seen He-Man in like 30 years either, but still, it's still just, I'm trying to think of where the name Triclops comes from. It comes from something.
That's got to be it. Right? Wasn't there one? Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was Man-E Faces, the one where his head flipped around?
Yeah, it could be.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. There's someone named Triclops in a whole bunch of Star Wars novels, but I don't think that's what we're talking about here. Is it a He-Man? No, it is a He-Man. There's a He-Man here. Okay. I got it.
You knew what you were talking about?
Yeah. So he is on He-Man. There is a Grayskull wiki where you can get information about Triclops.
That does not surprise me. That does not surprise me in the least.
Yeah. He is a minion of Skeletor, an enemy of He-Man. There
they
you go.
All are.
He wears a apparently. He wears a rotating visor helmet with three artificial eyes fixed to it, each with a special type of vision. Okay, this gives him the advantage of seeing in three directions at once. In other media, he sees only out of the front eye and rotates his visor depending on which type of vision he requires.
That's more information than anyone needed on Triclops.
But who cares? That's what this is all about. We're giving people information.
The details.
Exactly. It's all in the details. Come on. Why not? Come on. It was something you yourself just admitted that you hadn't thought of in decades. So there you go. It's to bring things back, to reminisce about.
Absolutely. Yeah. 80s action toys.
Yeah. And again, we are talking about non-Huey Lewis. So there you go.
Literally have been trying to think of a Huey Lewis song that would match being shot in the middle of the forehead for the last, 2 minutes. I cannot come up with one.
Well, you
perhaps my knowledge of Huey Lewis and the news music is not as extensive as I thought it was.
Apparently. But, we'll have to think about that one. Maybe we'll be able to come up with something by the end of today's show. When it actually happens, we'll have to try and think about that. So, yesterday we ended things with John beginning to, acquiesce to Hans's request that he drop his he drops his gun. And as we were talking about yesterday, it's probably, part of John's whole plan to keep Hans off guard.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So he's taking his time doing it.
Playing into Hans's ego, pumping Hans up, letting Hans think he's got the upper hand, letting Hans believe that John's got nothing left. He can't handle this. He's done. He's beaten. Letting Hans believe he's already won.
Correct. And so at this point, John basically drops his gun.
In my notes, I have he gives up with flourish.
There you go.
Drops it. Yeah, you got me. You got me, Hans. All right, John, calm down.
Yeah. And, at this point, they once again show Hans with the gun to Holly's temple. And Bonnie Bedelia once again does a great job of looking really, really scared and worried because she doesn't know John's plan.
Almost less bothered by the gun than how the terrible shape that it She's aware of the gun. She's terrified of the gun, but she's more focused on John and either the shape that he's in or what he has planned next. She, at no point does it look like she does not believe that John has a plan. She is ready for whatever he's got planned. I like that.
She's ready for it, but she doesn't. I don't think she 100% knows if she can trust him completely.
I disagree. I think that she trusts him completely. She knows he's got a plan, and she's ready. She's terrified, but she's ready.
Okay. All right. We'll give you that one. All right.
She may not trust him as a husband. She trusts his skill as a cop.
Right. Okay.
How about
that? That's true. And, you know, he drops the gun, and he drops it in such a way that, like, it lands with a thud. We hear, like, the sound of it just...
With flourish.
Yeah. Thud. Thud.
Performative. Again, performative.
Well, what would have made more sense if he would have thrown the gun as a distraction, you know, and then they'd look away and then quickly pull out his other gun. You know,
with you've got the three of them in a triangle, as we discussed yesterday. So you've got John, not Huey Lewis, and Hans and Holly in this triangle shape. If he had thrown the gun to one of the angles where no one is,
throw it behind him.
Look
behind him.
Yeah. Somewhere to give him the. But no, he throws it down in order to be able to, you know, like, you got me.
Maybe he could have taken it and, like, thrown it over Hans's head so that Hans has to turn around.
Somewhere behind the two of them. He should have used his, what is it, with the
quadratic
equations?
Use the force.
Figure out the Pythagorean theorem to figure out for the triangle which goes which, and then you just throw it on that angle, and that might not be what that theorem does. Listen.
Probably not.
He does
not.
A great job. Dropping the gun with flourish.
Yes.
That is what I meant.
And Eddie quickly, you know, runs. He actually doesn't even to run. He just quickly goes over to the place where his gun is strapped and quickly pulls it. And Han stops him and goes, "Nine, this is mine."
Yes. You know, have you discussed Alan Rickman's German accent?
Briefly, but if you want, you can go into it.
No, I just it's a. The success with doing accents well is subtlety, right? And to not overdo it, because when you overdo it, it sounds fake.
That's right.
And I like that his German accent throughout this movie is very effete, elite,
okay.
Subtle, very, very pompous, very elegant, very kind of posh. So you never, I mean, you he's German, but he's not like... I don't know. I buy it most of the time, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Okay. All right. That's fair. There's a reason for that. You know, he does it very, very well. It's mm-hmm. He's got a lot of panache.
Yes. Subtle and elegant. There you go.
Correct. And I love how he, like, throws in German words and at the same time, you know, like, and they do this throughout the movie, you know, where he'll just say, like, you know, like, even when he was talking to Carl and telling him, you know, shoot the glass. And he starts talking about it, and he says it in German, and Carl doesn't understand him, so he needs to then speak in English. But,
I
you know,
appreciate
is that,
that because again,
is that for us?
It reminds you, number one, reminds you that Hans Gruber is a German terrorist. Number two, reminds you that he also understands the audience is not entirely German.
That's right. Well, apparently in the German version, they had to redub everyone because apparently the pronunciation is just terrible, and you know the grammar is terrible. I remember hearing that. I don't know if it's true. I don't know German well enough. I mean, yes, this is the second of my of the second movie that I've done so far that has Germans in it.
Has a lot of German, you know, in it, yeah.
But in The Great Escape, the Germans didn't speak any German, so I didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah,
it was rare. It was rare, but that's fine.
Yeah, but yeah, I appreciate him throwing in nine. This is mine.
Yeah. This is mine. And, but again, it goes back to with Carl, you know, the fact that they're taking this too personally and that's their downfall.
It is,
you know,
but
Carl just should have just shot John and that would have been it.
John is playing into it. He wants Hans focused on him. He wants Hans to get too confident. Yeah. He's playing right into that.
Yeah.
The ego is his downfall.
Correct. But again, it's that they make this personal. You know, and you think that they're supposed to be so villainous that, like, forget about the personal. Just, you know, you don't have to have fun with killing someone. Just kill them, and that's it. But obviously the script needed it.
His explanation of his plan and the disappearing last, yesterday when we talked about it, still, if he had just stuck to that and not let it get personal, he'd be on that beach sipping on drinks and earning 20%. But
That's right.
like you said, he lets it get personal. So,
So you're saying it's his fault?
yeah.
Right. And then we get another shot of Holly, who's still scared. John then takes a few steps back, to put more distance between himself and, within the Pythagorean triangle that we talked about. Or the Mexican standoff, however you want to call it.
Geometry.
And then he slowly starts putting his hands up above his head, in a gesture in order to, now it's very funny that he does it this way. Is Bruce Willis trying to show off his body here? Is that what's going on here? This is David Addison trying to show that I'm no longer, I'm without a shirt, and this is not David Addison.
I don't think that's it, because again, he's breaking the mold of the 80s action heroes who all of them would have done this. Your Slys, your Schwarzeneggers, your Lundgrens, your Speakmans. That's right. I'm going to throw Speakman in there. All of those guys. Even your Seagals to a point. But no, this is your everyday guy. So for him, he's throwing his arms up again to play into Hans's ego, to let Hans. He just get too confident. He believe that he's beaten. He's got nothing left, and puts his hands up so that he can easily reach that gun he's got taped behind his back.
Don't give it away. Don't give it away. No, I'm just kidding.
Spoiler alert.
Obviously, anyone listening to this probably already knows what happens, especially since we've already talked about Triclops. So
That's right. So you know what?
we know that He-Man and Skeletor are going to be around.
He lifts his arms very slowly, because it's an easily recognizable, globally recognizable give up symbol. But then, it's going to allow him to get his hands where he needs to get. So he's enacting his plan while also playing into the villain's hands.
Right. Now, I decided to look up what does it mean, when you put your hands on your head. There are all these people who do, I know you like all these, you because of your other job or your other hobby, I guess you can say. The whole idea of using physical signs and things like that. So so I just had to look up what is the gesture of putting your hands, in the back of your head.
Nonverbal communication.
There you go. Nonverbal. See, I couldn't even think of what it was called. Nonverbal communication. Thank you. Right. So there's apparently two ways that you can put your arms behind your head like that, and they're known either as the cradle or the catapult. Okay. So the cradle suggests insecurity and the need for comfort, which I do not think is what's going on here. Okay.
Not at all.
And the catapult suggests aggression and dominance.
And what is the difference in the positioning between the two, the cradle and the catapult? The cradle to me sounds like you might have your fingers interlaced behind your head because you're forming a cradle for your head. And the catapult seems to me like your elbows would be forward because you're about to catapult something at your enemy.
Okay, so yeah, I'll read you what it says. In the cradle, the hands are on the back of the neck or head. The elbows are held close together, surrounding the sides of the head. The head can be bowed before being tilted back. When it's tilted back, the hands are supporting the weight of the head. More muted versions of this pose could have the hands on the front or side of the head. The
A
position, in,
defensive position.
yeah, this position implies insecurity, anxiety, or need for comfort. Okay, a bowed head is submissive and defeated. A head that's tilted back being supported is a self-comforting gesture. Someone else isn't holding our head at that moment, so we do it ourselves. Having the head supported is a very safe, comforting position. An image of a parent holding the baby comes to mind. The hands might move from the front or side of the head to the back. This stroking motion is also comforting. Okay, so that's more or less what they say about the cradle position. And if you want to talk about the catapult position, so it's a superficially similar look, but it's vastly different.
Elbows
Okay.
wide.
The head is upright or slightly back. The hands are behind the head but are not supporting it. The elbows are flared. The chest is usually full of air to aid in the expansion. Now, that's exactly what John's doing here.
Yeah, exactly.
The position implies aggression and dominance. All right. And the elbows are spread wide, exposing the face. This shows the person isn't afraid of an attack, either verbal or physical. It also takes up more space, making them look bigger. Okay.
See? Now, if Hans had studied these
That's
two,
right. If he knew about nonverbal communication, he might not have been shot.
that's right.
The chest expansion complements the elbow position, pushing them further apart. It makes the person look as thick and wide as they possibly can. Okay, the
And I will tell you that because literally we talked about this in dance class on Thursday night. When because our dance has a very upright posture and a lot of like we begin with a chest lift so that your shoulders are back and we talk about rolling the shoulders up and down is so that you kind of slide your shoulder blades down your back so that you can use your back muscles to hold up your arms. It, as you just mentioned, this second one, keeping the elbows wide, keeping the chest broad, keeping the and when your thumbs are turned down, your elbows naturally go up. So it does form everything in this shape that is way more aggressive. And for our dance style, we don't say aggressive, we say proud, elegant, regal,
So
carrying yourself.
John is acting very regal here. That's what he's
He's
saying.
acting very regal. He's acting very and aggressive, right? As you said, like the first, the cradle posture would be very, more defensive. This one is absolutely aggressive. And it is, while he has put his hands behind his head, in no way does he look submissive. Or that he's giving up. It looks aggressive top to bottom.
But Hans doesn't pick up on that.
He does not, because John has already fed into his ego so much, he feels like there's no way he could lose at this point.
Well, it's
He's
because
already
Hans
crossed
didn't.
all his henchmen off his list. He's thinking about how much money he's going to keep, how much less splitting of the profits he has to do. He's thinking, man, if I can eliminate not Huey Lewis while also eliminating John, I'm walking out of here with all of this.
So just basically the difference between the two hand motions, okay, the cradle is usually something that happens in a very genuine type of situation. It's an automatic reaction that when someone is possibly embarrassed or shame, they're feeling shameful about something that they've done. All right. Sometimes someone wants to look contrite or want someone with a legitimate complaint to go easy on them, while they're trying to fake it or something like that. And then the catapult is less reliable because it can easily be faked by someone who wants to seem super confident. This could actually be very uncertain. They can actually be very uncertain of themselves. Like you have to use judgment in each case. This is where it's good to look at the pattern of behavior rather than drawing conclusions from the single action. There
So take it in context.
you go. And it works. You know, I didn't think before checking, doing the search that it would actually make sense, for the
Honestly,
character.
I will pay attention to that in all of my situations going forward.
Especially when someone's holding a gun on you and tells you to drop your weapon.
Yes.
And at this point, Hans still, he doesn't want to give up. I mean, John says, "You got me," and then he's acting as if he's about to surrender, and then Hans says, "Still the cowboy, Mr. McLean. Americans all alike. Well, this time John Wayne doesn't walk off in the sunset with Grace Kelly." And John goes, "That's Gary Cooper." So
Can't let it go. Gotta correct him.
it basically means that John, like us, likes movies. He knows
Yeah,
that
of course.
John Wayne never walked off in the sunset with Grace Kelly.
Because again, he's a regular dude. He's very relatable. John McClane is one of us.
I mean, as much as I love movies, I don't think I would have picked up on that right away and saying, if someone were to say to me, John Wayne and Grace Kelly, I was like, okay, there's probably a movie out there with them.
I would say, oh, I'm afraid that's before my time. And also, John Wayne, come on.
So what do you know about? We talked a little about John Wayne a long, long time ago. So anyone can go back and listen to those episodes. But Grace Kelly, what do you know about her?
Nothing.
You know nothing
I
about
mean,
Grace
very
Kelly?
little. Very, very little. Not enough that I could speak at all to it.
Okay, so she was an actress who made some very big movies in the early 1950s. Okay,
Didn't
she
she marry into Monaco
yes she did
royalty?
yes she did.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, she's known mostly for her role in High Noon, for her role in The Country Girl, which won her an Oscar. Okay, she was in three Hitchcock movies, all one after the other. She was in Dial M for Murder, Rear Window, and To Catch a Thief.
Okay.
And she retired from acting not long after she made The Catch a Thief, and she married I guess it was Prince Rainier, and became the Princess of Monaco. And she never acted again. She became I guess what people of our generation would think of, like, for Princess Diana. She just went, she took her status, her royal status, to do charity work and to help people all around the world.
Which is wonderful.
Yes, it really is. She was very much involved with UNICEF and UNESCO, and then she actually unfortunately died at the age of 52 in September of 1982 when she got into a car crash.
I do
She
remember that,
apparently
yeah.
was, you remember when that happened? Or you remember that?
All right, well, I remember that that happened. I don't
Remember
remember.
when it
I remember it
happened.
being a thing. I don't know if I remember the actual. I mean, I would have. I would have been, what, 6 at the time, so I'm sure that it was
Right.
news.
Apparently, she had a stroke while she was driving and got into a
Well,
crash
that'll
because of
do it.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lost control of her car. And her daughter Stephanie was in the car, but she was able to make it out alive. So yeah, it's somewhat tragic, the whole story with her. So then we go to Gary Cooper. Okay, what do you know about Gary Cooper?
They all no, nothing.
Nothing. Okay. Well, you know that Gary Cooper was an actor, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I know that he's name checked in that song. I don't all these actors are I don't watch a lot of very, very old movies.
Okay, well, some of them are good. Some of them are good. He's
Some
he
of them.
was he won an Oscar for Best Actor twice. Okay, and even got an honorary Oscar in 1961 for, career achievement. What else? He was an actor from 1925 to 1961 and was in 84 different movies.
84.
Yeah. And he was a very well-known actor of the time. He won an Oscar for his role in Sergeant York and won an Oscar for his role in High Noon. Yeah, those are the two movies that he won for, which I personally think he was I love High Noon. Even forgetting about all the I guess you could say communist undertones and stuff like that that people sometimes see in there. I don't care about that. I think it's a fun movie. It's good. We were talking, about yesterday about the fact that I felt that Passenger 57 was too short, but High Noon is also a short movie. So, if you get it tight enough and you do it well enough, then I'll still
You
like
don't
it.
need anything extra.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, again, as I mentioned, I like the fact that it shows that John knows his movies and actors. He's, if only we can get John McClane on this show to talk about John McClane or Gary Cooper and, John Wayne and Grace Kelly. Who knows? And
Well,
Hans,
and I like that he won't let it slide. Like
that's
Hans is
right.
attempting to use it to be dismissive, but John's gonna clarify.
All right.
Let me just correct you on this.
Yeah. Which I can see, myself or other of our friends in the movie community, the movie loving community, correcting people, who would
Sure.
say something like that,
Yes. Yes,
like
that
if
makes
someone would
sense.
say, oh, and the love story between Leonardo DiCaprio and Gwyneth Paltrow in Titanic, and then, oh, wait a second, no, that type
Let me
of
stop
thing.
you right there.
Exactly. So yeah, I guess it all depends on the time, when you're talking about these things. But Hans has enough of it and goes, enough jokes. And the funny thing is John's not joking. John means it.
No, he's not.
He means it. That really is Gary Cooper. It's not a joke.
I'm trying to help you out, Hans, so you don't make that mistake again.
That's right. Because if you show up at any Movies by Minute conference and you say something like that, you're just gonna get you're
Right?
gonna be beaten up. You know, who knows?
We don't want you to look stupid in front of your peers.
That's right. What would Carl think if he heard you say that? Come on. Or Theo. What would Theo think? There you go. But as we know, John is basically just stalling here. You know, and he continues to try to bait Hans by saying, "You'd have made a pretty good cowboy yourself, Hans." Which, at this point, Hans, you know, begins to lose some of his focus, and he points the gun away from Holly and says, "Oh yes, what was it you said to me before?" And he goes, "Yippee-ki-yay, mother!" You know, like
The pronunciation of it is
is
just
it, well,
fantastic.
it's horrendous, but that's why it's fantastic.
Yes,
You know, he does a
absolutely.
terrible impression of John. You know, there's
Yes.
you know, a few years ago, I was on the MILFcast with Heather, and you know, one of the things they asked me to do beforehand was, you know, they're going to ask me what my best movie impression is, right? And I didn't take it seriously, and I've never done movie impressions and stuff like that. And then they asked me on the spot. I was like, okay, the only thing I think of was Die Hard. So I said, "Yippee-ki-yay, mother," and they started laughing because it was just so terrible, you know. So, you know, I don't know if I did a better impression than what Hans does here, but you know, I'm giving him a run for his money as to which of us is worse with the way that they're doing this. And John just starts laughing.
And again, it's Rickman's performance, right? It's Rickman just taking a little bit of nothing moment and really chewing every little bit of
Yes.
it into something iconic.
Yes. And he just starts laughing and laughing and laughing, you know, and then Hans starts laughing, and then,
Perfect distraction.
yeah, completely. And then
And then even Matt
non-Huey
Smith starts
Lewis
laughing.
starts
Like,
laughing.
guy, you shouldn't be laughing. You're not in this. You're not a part of this.
Yeah. And then the camera, they give us a great camera shot as they're laughing, and we see the camera is above John, and then it starts panning down. You know, to show we hear the laughing, we hear all three of them. You don't need any dialogue here. You just have the three of them laughing. Holly has no clue what's going on. She's trying to figure out, okay, they're gone. They've all lost it.
Visual storytelling when the camera shifts down behind and you get to see John's plan, and then John's plan hinges on a gun taped to his
Yeah,
back with two bullets in it. Just
exactly.
the two, I believe.
That is correct. Just two bullets. That's what we saw last
Which
week.
again, they showed us earlier, nothing wasted. Like that shot explaining and the tape,
Yes.
we know exactly what the game plan is
That's
here.
right.
It's not a great plan, but it's the only
That's
plan.
right. And it works. It works really well. And you know, we can see the camera panning down, and we see the gun and the holiday tape on it that's strapping it to his back. And at this point, the music starts getting really tense. You know, as they're all continuing to laugh, and then we get a shot of Holly, who looks completely confused as to what's going on here.
Confused and desperate, but also
Yes.
hopeful.
And then Hans points his gun towards John, and then John screams out, "Holly!" And, you know, it's amazing. John just reacts so fast here. He pulls out the gun from his back, you know, shoots Hans, who starts falling backwards, and then points the gun towards where Eddie is and shoots him and turns Eddie into a triclops.
And this is where you get the payoff of, as we've, it's gonna sound like a broken record, nothing is wasted in this movie. The payoff of the slow shot of the tape sitting on the counter, the explanation, the visual of there's only two bullets left. Then we get this shot of the gun. So we know exactly what's happening. None of that was in dialogue, didn't
That's
need
right.
it, so none of those shots are wasted. And this is where you get to the point where, like, the discussion of the even the yippee-ki-yay mother. Throwing that in earlier, this whole discussion about cowboys, again, could seem like a throwaway, could seem like a way to work in a catchphrase, could feel like a nonsense moment. It's not. It's brought back in that the fact, in true cowboy gunslinger style, he eliminates these dudes. It brings back the discussion in such a way that it now is key to the story.
Correct.
It always mystifies me. Like other movies, you can cut out stuff to fit it into a TV runtime. This movie, you can't cut anything out because everything comes back. Everything matters.
It's
Everything
all
means
building blocks.
something later on. Yes.
You know, and they just do it so well with the way that they
yeah.
do that here.
His bang bang, and then the whew, the little blowing.
Yeah,
of
no,
the, gun,
the blowing in the gun is
gun
tomorrow.
Blinker.
That's tomorrow. You're jumping ahead to
sorry,
tomorrow.
Sorry. Yes.
You know,
jeez.
Jeanette. And what's great here though is that, I mean, this is something I've mentioned earlier before. There's a reason why the bad guys use an MP5. Okay, the whole reason that they had the bad guys use MP5s in this movie is so that it will have the same bullet that you would put in a 9mm gun. Okay, so therefore he has the interchanging ability of deciding which gun to put the bullets in. Like, we saw on Friday that he had the two bullets, but we don't know which gun he put them in. You know, he theoretically could have put them in the machine gun.
I feel like a layperson doesn't know that. I had no idea that was a thing.
Okay.
So,
okay, but...
but if you... Let's put it this way. If you have that knowledge, then you get an extra layer.
Yes,
so
for
yes.
sure. For sure. And, I mean, I love also the fact that he shoots him, he shoots Hans in such a way that the bullet goes through him, and then you can see that it goes through the window behind him also. And there's, like, a little bit of blood splatter, which we'll see a lot more of tomorrow. And there's also, like, a little hole there, you know, in order to, you know, start the, you know, the spider web of glass about to shatter and stuff like that. So it,
because your standard person isn't going to be enough to break a corporate building window, but if that corporate window has already had a bullet go through it,
well, wait a second. Marco was able to go through the window when he threw him through it.
Yeah, but he had already hit that with a chair a couple of times.
Yeah, he didn't do much damage with the chair.
He weakened it. Weakened it a little.
I don't know. Don't know. All right, so you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
No.
Okay. All right, so the script has a few
covered
the script has a few other minor discrepancies as always. So first of all, when Hans talks to Eddie, he speaks only in German. He says, "Nein, das ist mein." Okay, das ein ist mein, something like that, which I guess means this is mine.
You would have gathered that from context and from
yeah
delivery, but I'm fine with it being in
English.
Yeah. And that also implies the fact that not Huey Lewis doesn't speak
that's
English.
Right.
I like the idea that, again, reminding us that he assembled this crew because they're disposable and they each have a separate skill set.
Yes.
So I like
non-Huey Lewis is good at reception.
Yes, exactly. He's the friendly face you want to see at the door.
Yes. No, you have non-Huey Lewis there instead of the non-John Larroquette. Yeah,
that's right, exactly.
Another change is that instead of him calling Hans an asshole after he says that's Gary Cooper, in the script he goes, that's Gary Cooper's head. Again, no, I think asshole works better here. Yeah, for sure. And then Hans's response of no more jokes is, no more jokes, drop it or she gets it between the eyes. I saw the look on your face on that one. That, you see, nonverbal communication, but we're on a verbal medium. That's the problem.
It doesn't need to be there, right? The threat is it, and I prefer, in that way, and again, because it's a script, right? You have to write out what you want the performances to be, but really the advantage you have in a visual medium like a movie is that the performers can do all that.
Yeah.
Visually, not verbally. And I think that's that level of threat. At no point do we believe that Holly is not in danger. The threat is legitimate for her, so
correct.
We didn't need all that.
Right.
And also, it's too, I mean, Hans has been genuinely threatening the whole time, but also, again, elegant, posh, upper level, upper crust, saying she gets it between the eyes is a little too gutter level for that character.
Correct. I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
And just wait, it gets even more. So then McLean says to him, "Well, Hans, now you're the cowboy." And Hans goes, "Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker! Now you're f***ing." So,
no,
I don't
that's
know.
Also too gutter level
it's,
for him.
It's too plain shit in automobiles for you. You know.
Yeah. Yes. I don't care for that.
Yeah. I don't care for that type of talk.
No, I don't care for that.
And then McClane says, "Holly, now!" And it says, instantly, Holly sidesteps, jabs her elbow into Hans's face. McClane, at the moment that Holly moves, McClane grabs his Beretta from its hiding place, taped to the back of his neck, shoots Hans high in the chest. The bullet passes right through Hans, and the window behind him splatters with blood and shatters. Even while this is happening, McClane spins towards Eddie, and Eddie takes a gunshot and drops just like on Gunsmoke.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were talking earlier today about, you know, like, Huey Lewis songs that we could use as the possible epitaph for Triclops non-Huey Lewis. So I just went through a list of his songs, and I was trying to think of something that would work here. Okay, so Hip to Be Square, maybe. Heart and Soul maybe. Actually it fits more Hans at this point because he shot him in the chest.
Yeah.
Doing It All for My Baby. That's John. It's All Right, maybe. Oh no, here we go. Non-Huey Lewis, Working for a Living. There you go.
There it is. And that's it right there. That's his whole deal.
Trouble in Paradise.
No, I Working for a Living. Boy, that's a great song.
Yeah.
All right.
I Know What I Like. I don't know. Naturally. You Crack Me Up. There you go. That. Cruisin'. I Want a New Drug.
I mean,
and Still Be Bare About. And The Heart of Rock and Roll.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All of them.
I actually love the song The Heart of Rock and Roll, especially because the version of it that I recorded years and years and years ago was from a Detroit radio station. And there's a point where they say Cleveland and then they say Detroit. And then on their version, they said Detroit three times in a row because there's a pause there. Nice. So they have Detroit. So
very clever.
Yes.
Very yes, clever.
All right. Well, every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track Holiday Edition, where my guest will give a little story, anecdote, adventure, something that happened to them that's somehow related to the holidays. So what have you got for us, Jeanette?
This is more of a general kind of thought about the holidays not lately, but I think schedule-wise, for me, December is a good time to travel, which is kind of strange. I live in the Midwest in the States, so it's in Midwest, meaning the Great Lakes region, even more specifically. And if you don't know, it can be very snowy and very cold.
Not familiar.
Not entirely pleasant here in December. So December is a good time to take some time and go somewhere. Early December.
Go somewhere where it's
so
hot.
Something that anywhere else, honestly. Just before the holiday season really picks up, because I do love the holidays here, especially with the snow. I think it's wonderful. But I like traveling in early December. I think it's really cool to go other places and to see holiday decorations, how they do them. So I've been lucky enough to be in Ireland in December and to see a lot of Christmas decorations up and how they celebrated, that kind of thing. And then last year I was in Curacao in the Caribbean for early December. And as we were at the resort, they started putting up all their Christmas trees, and all their Christmas trees at the resort were very, very tropical colors. So they had like teal Christmas trees with pink decorations on them. And I really enjoyed that. I thought that was so cool. So I think it's really fun to take time during the holidays to not only appreciate what you have, but to see how everybody else does it. And so I really lobby hard for traveling during the holiday season so that you can see it in other places. So that would be and especially places with climates that are different than your own.
So where are you going later this week?
Right? I'm working on another Caribbean vacation. I think that might be my new thing, is to take a trip every December someplace lovely and warm and tropical.
Okay.
So that I can see them decorate for Christmas. So, yeah, I think that is super cool. I really like it.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much for that. So you want to once again tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Find me on all your socials out there, on the Facebooks and the Instagram and the Twitter. I do not have a TikTok because Danny Glover doesn't allow me to do that. So you can find me at Jeanette Ward on most things, JY Ward on the Instagram. And then you can find my movie reviews over at jwardadventures.blogspot.com. And if you want to check on my belly dance troupe, since we did talk about arm strength and posture in this episode,
and aggression.
You can find us at and aggression. You can find us at tamarindbellydance.com. And on YouTube, if you just type in, we've got our own YouTube channel. So if you type in Tamara into Belly Dance, you'll be able to see some of our performance videos. And I do share a lot of that on Instagram as well. So you can see what I mean when I talk about the upright posture. And if you're interested in taking classes, we do have Zoom options. So be sure to look that up.
All right. Very cool. Very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search on any Google or search engine that you use for Move Your Own Minute. You can find me on my website, moveyourownminute.com. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on Twitter. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah, yippee-ki-yay, mother.